Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Just is 3-0 to City, in your opinion, an accurate scoreline from what we saw today?
No, I don't think so. I think it's fake. It's a fake result. If you tell me 2-0 at half-time, I would say yes. But 2 or 3-0 in the end of the game, I say completely no, because we were the best team by far in the second half.
No way, Jose. City thrashes the defending champs in a Serie A and La Liga preview. European Football Weekly starting right now.
I'm going to wait till the beat going.
Aguero, Toure, Aguero again. This time, Sergio Aguero beats Begovic at last. Manchester City played the ball around beautifully. They stayed patient in the face of some stubborn Chelsea defending. And finally, there was a gap big enough for the brilliant Argentinian to find a way through.
Yeah, that was the first of three goals for Manchester City against Chelsea. 3-0 is the final. I'm Dan Riccio. That is Thomas Michalakos.
Boy, do I have egg on my face with my prediction of Manchester City.
Yeah, out of the top four, you said?
Look.
Okay. You, like the rest of the football world, are just out to lunch. I don't know what everybody was thinking this year, saying Manchester City, not good enough for top four, not good enough to contend. Like, this team got better in the offseason. Chelsea didn't. We saw that on the field today.
Are you insane? You don't understand how the rest of the soccer world picked Man City to drop out?
Is Peter Cech more important
Forget
to
about
Arsenal
that.
Than Raheem Sterling is to Manchester City?
And you're wrong there, too, because Raheem Sterling is not as important to Manchester City.
He adds another dimension to their attack, which is what exactly we've seen through the first 2 weeks.
Okay, his first 2 weeks, number one. Number two, City is going to live and die by the health of Aguero, Yaya Toure, and Vincent Kompany. And what we've seen in the past is they can't keep fit for long periods of time. So we'll see what will happen to City, because we'll see what happens to those three players.
Three things that I saw out of this game from Manchester City, and trust me, we'll talk about Chelsea, and we don't have a lot of time because we are going to talk to Adam Digby for a Serie A preview and a La Liga preview with David Cartledge, so we really got to be quick here. But Vinny Kompany, much better so far this year.
So far.
Eliqui Magala looks like a different player right now.
Completely.
Looks better. Fernando looks better. And you're forgetting about Wilfred Bony, who can score goals. I'm sure he can score goals when David Silva's feeding him the ball.
I didn't forget about him. I just didn't want to mention him because he's not important.
At Dan Riccio 590, that's where I am. You can follow him at UnfitRef and tell him how dumb he is, please. because I'm tired of doing it all by myself.
Remember those three players, Toure, Kompany, and Aguero. Fit and healthy. That's the only way City's going to do anything with what you're saying they're going to do.
Yes. Sure. Okay. So, Chelsea, you heard the clip off the top. Mourinho calls it a fake result.
What's the definition of fake? Not real, right?
Yeah.
This was definitely a real result.
He's basically calling it a tale of two halves, as number one, Arsenal or Chelsea were completely dominated in the first half. He admitted that. Second half, he said Chelsea were the better team.
Did you see that?
Nope.
I didn't see it. 1 minute, like, okay, maybe the first 15 minutes, you could say Chelsea was pushing it a little bit. But after that, and they were never better than City. City outclassed them the entire game.
30 seconds in, Aguero had the first chance of the game. Should have scored it. If not for Asmir Begovic, it was 3-0 at halftime.
I feel for Asmir Begovic because he had a fantastic game. His defensive line led him out to dry. Cahill was the worst out of the bunch, which is why I don't understand why
Terry was subbed off.
Exactly.
Played Cahill every minute of the PL season last year.
And they were praising him up and down London.
Blue
side of London.
Yeah, Alan Shearer on Match of the Day called it a direct message to Abramovich that Chelsea are needing to buy, and specifically a center back. Do you agree with that?
No, of course not.
No, I don't either. I think Chelsea, if you look at their preseason, they started later than everybody else. And you can tell, we've said it for weeks since we started doing the show up again this year, they don't look fit, they don't look right, and it's showing on the field. And sure enough, first 2 weeks of the season, they look awful.
If I were to tell you that Liverpool would have been ahead of Chelsea by 5 points after week two, you'd have thought I've gone crazy. But it's actually the case. And the thing is they look flat. Chelsea looks flat across the bar. Across the pitch. They look flat.
They were better in the second half, but they still weren't better than City in the second half.
Hazard and Cesc Fabregas shallow their former self the first two games of the season.
And not only that, Matic and Ivanovic look awful right
yep.
now.
Yep.
They just don't look fit. They don't look up to snuff. They don't have that urgency. Maybe they got it a little bit in the second half, but they are really, really bad right now. And if they don't turn things around quickly, I mean, the season could already be out of reach.
Well, you don't want to say that, but I understand what you're implying in the sense where they're already 5 points back of Manchester United.
And Manchester City yeah. and Leicester.
Right? Like how you throw in Leicester. But you're not, you know, another tie or another, you know, drop yeah. points here or there.
I'd love to sit here and talk about this game all day, but we have two very more fun things to do, and that is talk to David Cartledge to preview La Liga and talk to Adam Digby to preview Serie A.
So time is short.
Manchester United and Liverpool, quick note on them. They both get 1-0 wins, United over Villa, Liverpool over Bournemouth. First of all, Liverpool shouldn't have won the game. The goal was offside.
And, in the new rules, it's a definite offside, yeah.
And
right.
Benteke should have been denied his first Liverpool goal in the Premier League. And
over in Manchester United, though.
Manchester United, they get a goal from Januzaj.
But two goals. First goal, own goal against Tottenham.
Yeah.
Second goal was going right into the hands of Brad Guzan.
deflection
in the net.
Look, I'm looking at this from Manchester United and Liverpool's perspective. Two teams that had struggles defensively last year. I kind of look at it as, most of our new players are coming in the attacking third. Let them figure out their stuff.
Build the chemistry.
They'll get better as the season goes on. If our defense is solid, we'll collect some points here early on.
Look, if I'm Van Gaal and I'm Rodgers, I'm smiling because that's two clean sheets and 6 points.
And you're 5 points ahead of the defending champs. He's at Unfit Ref. I'm at Dan Riccio 590. Coming up, a couple of the great guests that we always bring you here on European Football Weekly. We're previewing La Liga and we're previewing Serie A. That's coming up next. European Football Weekly, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Well, there's three of them, Riley. Still going. Look at this, Kevin. It's a brilliant run from Messi. Will he go all the way?
Stop him. There was three there.
There's a break for Tevez.
Oh,
burst through. Lucarelli gets around. Felipe!
Mamma mia!
And sticks the dagger home.
Argentina class in a beautiful Albi Celeste class from the ex-Boca Juniors man, Carlito Tevez. The Apache scalps him. This is one to celebrate, people. He finishes in his coolest James Bond in a white tuxedo. But look at the challenges in front of him. There's nothing more that he loves than a raw defender stretched out. And he slaloms through them. Alberto Tomba is somewhere applauding this. Look at this. He uses his players as guiding reference. My Lord, what a goal.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'm going to remember that goal for the rest of my life. Carlitos Tevez, thank you. Thank you for all the memories you provided.
Forget about the
Juventus shirt.
Forget about the goal. What about the call? It's amazing. He must have in his contract there's a defibrillator right by his side because he looks like he's going to have a heart attack every time he speaks.
Look, you know what? Sometimes the call of the goal has to match the magnificence of the goal.
I agree.
And I think in that case, it's hard to do in that case. Because of how great that goal was from Carlos Tevez against Parma. And if you haven't seen it, please go over to YouTube and find it because it's unreal. And maybe the goal of last season, but
this is an example.
Messi's goal as well, you heard there in the Copa del Rey final, was equally as good.
The calls are amazing.
The calls were good. Ray Hudson, of course, back for another season calling Serie A. We will talk to Adam Digby. Yes, you know him, our Italian football correspondent, to preview the Serie A season. But first, Thomas, and I should say, this is European Football Weekly. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, and you can follow the show, hashtag EFW590. Follow us. I'm at DanRiccio590. He is at UnfitRef on the Twitter. And our next guest is coming from Spain. Fresh off vacation, that is our favorite Spanish correspondent. Talking La Liga, it is David Cartledge. Thanks again for joining us, David. Another exciting season coming up.
Hey, I'm doing well. Yeah, and it's been a good summer. I'm glad that to have some time off from football, but at the same time, I'm glad it's back. So yeah, I feel refreshed, and I'm looking forward to this new season.
Before we get to the La Liga preview, how do you feel about the Knicks' fourth overall pick there?
Oh man, I knew this was coming. This is the problem when I speak to you guys. You bring the Knicks up.
I see Phil Jackson is totally everything right about Andrea Bargnani, so it's a good sign that they're not bringing him back, or at least doesn't look like it, but you never know with the Knicks these days.
You never know.
Didn't want to upset you fresh off your vacation, but let's get into this La Liga season. And, I mean, it's been a weird summer. I mean, usually our summers are filled with Real Madrid transfer rumors and Barcelona transfer rumors. Well, Barcelona's got the transfer embargo, but they did sign Arda Turan, who can't, I guess, play until January. And Real Madrid, they've done absolutely nothing. Now, recently, we've heard they might sign Mateo Kovacic, but is it just me, or has this been a really quiet summer coming out of La Liga? At least for the big two.
Yeah, definitely. I think definitely for both teams, it's been quite quiet. It's been minor restructuring, just maybe a few little tweaks here and there, especially for Real Madrid after they've been blasting money the last few years, and right now it's just fine tuning. And then obviously with Barcelona, they've got their restrictions, but I think they've made two sensible signings. But I think next summer, both teams will probably be a bit more active.
Now, speaking of Barcelona and Real Madrid, let's put them aside for a second. My question is, it's been somewhat of a three-horse race, you could say, now with Simeone and Atletico Madrid, and I know they fell off the way last year, but what can we expect from Atletico this year? Are we going to see them drop out of Champions League place, or are they still going to be fighting for the title, let's say?
Yeah, I think I'm really excited about Atleti, more than any team, actually. I think this is the most significant rebuild that they have had since Simeone actually came to the club. He's changing it all around again. He was very disappointed with the way Atleti approached the summer market last summer. And this time, they've done a lot better. I think they've got a higher quality of player in. I think players that will know the new system better and better for Simeone to work with. So I think they're going to be really exciting. And then pre-season as well, you try not to read too much into it. You try not to get too excited. But Atleti have been the best team out of everybody in pre-season.
Yeah, and Dan, we were talking about, you know, in Spain, no one's making any signings and this and that. I'm looking at Atletico Madrid now, and I'm counting the money, and it's ridiculous. It's way over $100 million.
I meant from the big two, Thomas, but
listen,
yes.
It's a big three now, okay? Get it straight.
I guess it is, but Luciano Veto is kind of the interesting one that I find coming out of this transfer summer. Is he going to find space behind Jackson Martinez, or is he going to be a big part of this 11 over at Atleti?
He's going to be a big part of it. I think he really wants to, I think Simeone really wants to go with that three-pronged attack as his first choice. So Griezmann, Jackson, and Luciano Vietto. I think that's the three he wants to go with. With that, he's got a lot of pace. He's got a lot of power too, a lot of technical ability. And they're going to cause some, they're going to be a problem next year at Atletico Madrid. They're going to cause teams some serious chaos, I think, with them.
And speak on Felipe Luis coming back. How big is that?
Yeah, it's excellent, because the great thing here is you're getting a player who knows the system. He knows how to work every single day in training. He knows what Simeone wants. There's no adaptation period for him. He will slot straight in at that left-back slot, what was problematic, I think, for Atleti yesterday. Siquiera wasn't really up to it. His Gamas was well out of his depth in the bigger games, and he got made look a fool a few times. And so Felipe comes back in. It's a perfect signing. It really is. It couldn't have been any better.
David Cartledge, our guest here on European Football Weekly, as we preview the La Liga season. And David, moving it back to Barcelona, A lot of people kind of worried about this preseason so far, or the lead up to this year. There was the game with Sevilla where they gave up 4 goals. The European Super Cup, they ended up winning 5-4 in extra time. There was a lot of worry about that. And then in the first leg of the Spanish Super Cup, they lose 4-0 to Athletic Bilbao.
Unbelievable.
It's kind of crazy, but you know, 8 goals in 2 games, that's nothing to scoff at. What's going on with Barcelona right now?
Yeah, I think defensively they're just having a few problems in terms of the system and getting back down to things. And then the way Luis Enrique always sets up his teams is they don't really kick in, I think, until after the Christmas period and when the January window is finished and you come back. And down that stretch, he likes his teams to be stronger there. So I think physically right now, Barcelona are in a very, very poor shape. So I think it might take maybe 4 weeks before they really get up to speed in a better motion, basically. So yeah, it's a little bit of a concern right now, the way they start and very slow at the blocks at the moment.
And the interesting injury news out of the summer, Neymar coming up with the mumps. Is there worry that this is going to get contagious? I mean, we need the utmost medical staff here. Like, you know, you can't have Chelsea's medical staff on these guys for the next couple weeks.
What's next, the Black Plague? What's going on?
I hope not, because I live in Barcelona.
We need you to get the mumps virus cure of some kind. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Thomas, I think you have a question as well.
Yeah, what I've been noticing a lot is we see it all the time, right? Everyone's trying to pilfer Barcelona's, you know, youth product, basically, the Barcelona B. And they, how, now that they've dropped down a division, we've seen Adama Traore gone. Halilovic, there's talk about him. A lot of names popping up. Is this a worry for Barcelona that they're losing all their younger talent?
Yeah, of course, because it's one of the foremost principles that the club is based upon. You know, that they're Cantera, La Masia, the players that have come through. You know, it's what the system's led through, and it was one of the most. Well, it still is, I think, at the moment, still is one of the most unique things in world football. And it is deteriorating in part. They're losing the values a little with these younger players going to places like Stoke or Aston Villa or anywhere like that to get minutes, because it's just at the moment it's very difficult for them to come through.
One quick little side note on Barcelona. How are you in agreement with me on how horrible this preseason cup is? 2 legs? We all scoff at the Community Shield and how horrible that is. Imagine in Spain, 2 legs? I know, surely, David, if it was you making the decisions, it would only be a 1-legged affair. Am I right?
Oh, you know it. I'd have 1 leg in this and 1 leg in the Copa del Rey, the cup competition throughout the summer, throughout the season as well. 1 leg it always.
I do everything 1-legged, but that's okay. David, Mateo Kovacic going to Real Madrid. I mean, this story came out, I guess, yesterday on Sunday over the weekend, and I was kind of weirded out by it. I didn't know what to make of it because I'm trying to figure out where exactly Mateo Kovacic fits into Real Madrid's midfield.
Yeah, for me, it's just a signing for the sake of a signing. It just doesn't make any sense. Midfield's always a strange area for Real Madrid. I think they're always looking for different profiles of players to go there. And they convince themselves they've got the right man. You look at the last few years, they've got Yara Mendy, Casemiro, and Lucas Silva as well, who came highly rated from Brazil. And none of them's really worked out. Casemiro's back right now. But honestly, if he goes next summer to somewhere else, I would not be surprised. Mm-hmm. And I would not be surprised if Yara Mendy's still left. And they're always in search of this midfield player, and they just never seem to get their man.
Seems to me, like you said, it was a signing just for the sake of keeping him out of the other people's hands and bring someone in, because they had no one other than that in Rafa's, you know, short career now as manager. Now, with Rafa coming in, what kind of Real Madrid team are we going to see? Because he's notorious for playing a very slow, kind of boring. I'm a Liverpool fan, so I know about Rafa. You know, 1-0 games. Yeah. They don't do the business like that in Real Madrid. What can we see with this Real Madrid team under Rafa?
Yeah, I think they're seeking a bit more organisation, a bit more structure, a bit more order, shall we say. And that's definitely what his management style is based upon, as you will, of course, know, and sometimes achieve success. But it's been a while since it has achieved success, and that's what makes me always very strange about Rafa Benitez. You know, he's not one of the top 5 coaches in the world. Some people will argue he's not even in the top 10. So for Real Madrid to get him in is very surprising. It's a strange appointment for me still.
So strange. Is it good or bad?
Oh, bad, I believe.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Didn't call me out on this at the end of the season. But, yeah, I think this is a bad appointment for them.
This is why I like having David on the show. He agrees with a lot of the things that I feel.
Straight to the point, too. I like it. He puts his neck on the line. I love it.
So, David, I'm looking at the transfer summers for all three of these teams, and we just talked about the lack of activity at Barcelona, obviously, because they don't really have a choice otherwise. Real Madrid, we talked about their transfer summer, not that great, and at Atleti's, we talked about theirs, and it's very impressive. I'm almost leaning towards Atleti as my favorite to win La Liga this year. Is that crazy? Am I out of my mind?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, maybe I don't like having you on the show anymore.
I think Barcelona are a clear favorite still. And then Rafa, despite that being that bad appointment, I still think they're going to be there because of the sheer individual quality. Ronaldo's going to get you 50, 60 goals in a season. James Rodriguez is going to win. Gareth Bale, he surely can't get any worse. He surely can't not try any less hard. So, you know, things are going to be good for them. So Atleti's got that to catch up to, and that's their task.
Very quickly, David, because we're running out of time, we talked about the top three. Really, no one cares about the rest because, you know, the top three, those are the only ones that are going for the title. But as football fans, I care about the rest. I do. I know you do. So Valencia finished fourth last year. We're looking at Sevilla. Villarreal picked up Soldado this just, what, a week ago?
Yep.
Athletic Bilbao, yep. We saw what they did with against Barcelona. Mind you, it's only one game, whatever. Who's going to make it into the top four, the last fourth spot?
For me, it's going to be Valencia again. I think it's going to be pretty much, you know, we're going to look at it from 1 to 3 between Atleti, Barca, and Real Madrid, and then the fourth for Valencia. I don't think Sevilla's got enough to do it. I think they badly replaced Carlos Bacca.
And we also would like to hear a surprise team of yours to watch in La Liga, as well as one player to watch. Obviously not from the big teams, but somebody we should be looking for on the outskirts of the big four in La Liga right now, David.
Okay, I'm going to give you a very, very left field pick. There's a boy at Granada called Isaac Success. He's a Nigerian boy. He's still a teenager, but he is a very, very good player. He's got everything. He's got technical quality. He's got physical attributes, and I think he's going to be one to watch. I think the big clubs are going to be surrounding him at the end of the season. That's my player. In terms of my team, I'm going to go again very, very left field, and Getafe. I think they're building really, really well this summer. Some interesting pickups, and I think they've got one of the best Spanish coaches in Fran Escriba. Very underrated, but he's a very intelligent man and a really, really good coach. So that's my surprise pick.
With a team that used to have Burger King as their sponsor on their jersey, I like the pick. Getafe, I'm going with that one. And, of course, when you have success as your last name, you can only be a success. So I'm agreeing with you on both accounts, David.
That's perfect. That's what I like to hear. I don't want any disagreements on this show.
See, I was really looking forward to seeing Chiro Immobile at Sevilla. But, you know, I'm Italian, so what do you want from me?
I'm a bit doubtful of him. I always have been. I don't think he's very mobile, you know.
David, it's been a pleasure previewing the season with you. We hope to talk to you throughout the year. It's always a pleasure when you do join the show, and you're so grateful with your time. We do appreciate it. We'll certainly talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. I love talking to you guys, and we'll review some Drake songs next time we're on as well, yeah.
Oh, God.
That new album and this Meek Mill thing, I'm still trying to figure out who Meek Mill is. But yeah.
Oh, come on. I'm team Meek Mill on this, but that's a discussion for another day.
I was about to say, you're not the only one that doesn't know who he is. I had no idea until the Drake feud.
When you come over to Toronto, we'll give you a tour of where Drake grew up. You'd probably be very surprised at where Drake grew up here in Toronto.
Oh, definitely. I'm holding you that. I want to come over.
You can also watch Sebastian Giovinco. He's the best thing we got around here in terms of football, and it's not a bad one at that. But, David, thanks again so much.
Thanks a lot, guys. Great thing to you.
And you can follow David on the Twitter at DavidJACA. And I implore you to do so because he is great. And unlike us, he will delve further into La Liga outside of Real Madrid and Barcelona.
Well, with us, it's the only reason why we don't do that is because of time restraints, Dan. Or
yes.
Else we'd be
There's
talking...
only so much football we can actually watch.
All we need is management to give us a little bit more time.
So with that, and a great La Liga preview that was, but now we have to go over to Italy, Thomas, and it's been one hell of an Italian offseason, something we haven't really seen in recent years, and joining us to figure out what's going on over in Italy right now, it is Adam Digby, at ADZ77 on the Twitter. Thanks again for joining us, Adam. Exciting season coming up in Italy.
No problem, guys.
Yeah, so it's going to be a very interesting season in Serie A this year. Not that it isn't always, but there's been a lot of different things to come out of this. We'll start with Juventus, who, look, they had an unreal season last year, almost winning the treble, losing out to Barcelona in the Champions League final. And what do they do over the summer? They completely overhaul the squad, something they haven't done really at all in recent years, where they've just kind of tinkered, added some different pieces, sure, added some big pieces in Tevez and things like that, but not a complete overhaul is what has gone on here. What happened with Juventus this summer, and why the decision to go with this rebuild of the squad?
I think, if I'm completely honest, I think, and I'm sure you can attest to this yourself, it seems almost as if it was forced upon Juve. Pirlo obviously decided he was ready to move on for a new adventure after 4 years. Tevez wanted to go home, and as we've seen with him in the past, it's kind of pointless to try and change his mind once he's made that up. And I think Juve owed it to him to let him go to Boca Juniors while he was still able to offer them something too. And then I think on the back of those two choosing to walk away, I think Arturo Vidal has come to the same conclusion that he wanted to try something new. And I think it's hard with Juve. I think you've got to look at it as if you reverse the way that the transfers happened, I think people, Juventus fans in particular, would be a lot happier with the situation. If those three guys walked away on the day after the Champions League final, and then the news about the likes of Paulo Dybala and Sami Khedira and Mario Mandzukic came afterwards, I think there'd be a very, very different opinion taken on the summer that they've had. And I think you have to sort of try and detach yourself from that and see the ins and the outs as one and forget the order that they've happened in. And I think it's a very, very positive summer, all things considered, really.
So you think that was going to be actually my question. Do you think it was a positive summer for Juventus for all the people that have departed and come in? But of the people coming in, you say that it's positive. Who is the one that's caught your eye the most that will fit right into the whole system and the Allegri plan and what Juventus actually needed with the outgoings?
I think, strangely, the one who I think fits in instantly is Sami Khedira, because obviously with Pirlo and Vidal moving on, I think there's a spot for him in midfield. I think midfield is going to be very interesting for Juve this season. I think if Khedira can get fit and stay fit, which is quite a big if, with him already being injured, but I think if he takes that holding role in defensive midfield and Marchisio goes back to the sort of shuttling midfielder who get with license to get forward that he was before, and obviously Pogba taking on the number 10 takes the responsibility that goes with that, I think that's still a very, very good midfield, and that can really make a difference.
Now, to stay away from Juve for a second, I know Dan wants to probably talk a little bit more
about
Juventus.
I can talk about Juve all day.
Oh, I'm outnumbered now. Okay, let's move on to...
Better than talking about Liverpool, that's for sure.
All right, AK, that's a low blow. All right, let's stick with Serie A. Speaking with Milan, both teams have done crazy things bringing in players. Now, I heard... Roberto Mancini talking about that he was forced to sell Shaqiri because of the financial fair play relegations. Same thing with, what's his name? I'm sorry.
Kovacic,
sorry. Out of the two Milan sides, who has done the better business?
I think Inter, to be honest. And I think almost like the same with Juve. There's a lot of wailing about Kovacic being sold on. But I think if you're looking at, they've got to sacrifice one of their big name players to sort of balance the books. Between him, Icardi, and Handanovic, you would sell Kovacic 10 times out of 10, not even 9. The kid's got fantastic potential. Eventually, I'm sure somewhere along the line, he'll blossom into an excellent player. But the other two are excellent players today, and Inter need to win today. I think the arrival of Kondogbia is huge for them. And they've made the necessary additions in defence, which has been a problem for them for 5 years now since they won the treble, when they had Walter Samuel and Cordoba and people like that. I really do expect a good season for Inter, if I'm honest.
What are your thoughts on Stefan Jovetic coming back and playing for coming back to Italy and playing for Inter?
Yeah, I think obviously he's proven in the past that he can be very effective in Italy. He's still young. I think he'll gel well with Icardi. And with as I say, with the likes of Kondogbia in midfield, with a solid base to play from, I think those two can be very, very effective. I really do like the look of Inter. I'm quite impressed with what they've done, and as I say, I expect them to be much further up the table than they were last year. But by the same token, there's been a few people tweeting at me today, like, "Oh, Inter can mount a Scudetto challenge because Juve have lost some players," but. Anybody who thinks that really needs to seriously though, I'm not saying this is a Juventino, but go and look at last season's league table. Inter were 32 points behind Juventus. 32. That you are not making up that difference in one summer. Maybe Gigi Buffon retired and Massimiliano Allegri did a Conte and quit 2 days ago. Sure, but. All things being equal, you are not making up that distance in a single summer. Nowhere.
Adam Digby, our guest here on European Football Weekly, as we preview the Italian Serie A season. So over at Milan, it's been quite a while since we've seen them splash the cash, I guess you could say. But that's really what they've done this summer. And they've spent a lot of it on some players that maybe some people are kind of wondering, Carlos Bacca and Luis Adriano and... A lot of money for a young Italian defender and Alessio Romagnoli, but is this Milan squad all of a sudden now a contender for a Champions League place in the top three, Adam?
Well, I think given what I just said about Inter and the fact that Milan finished 3 points behind them,
I figured you were going that way, yeah.
But by the same token, again, you have to look at what they've done. And yes, they've spent money, but they've spent it in the right way. All too often we've seen with Milan, it's been a... make do with what they can and then splash out on a ridiculous signing that pleases Silvio Berlusconi and pretty much nobody else. I think like Robinho falls into that category. I think Ronaldinho, even when he arrived, fell into that category a little bit. And Balotelli, I think for all he did well for them, I think he was another one where it was just, we can, so why not? I think this summer they seem to have approached it with a well thought out plan. They still have a lot of issues and they still have some areas to address. But watching them today in the Coppa Italia, albeit it was only against the Serie B side in Perugia, they looked a lot more organised. They looked a lot more solid in defence, and a lot more free flowing in attack with some ideas. I mean, it helps the fact that they could put three midfielders on the pitch who can tackle and pass at the same time, which is a rarity for Milan over the past few years. I think they'll definitely improve, and I think Romagnoli is going to be essential to that. He's a young defender. He was not going to get in the team at Roma. He would have been a rotation player for them, but he'll be a cornerstone for Milan, and that's the kind of player they've got to invest in. You look at where they're coming from. It finished 10th last season. They really did need to just scratch everything and start again, and that's what they've done, and they seem to have made the right signings. If Mihailovic can get them to gel together and be an effective unit, there's a lot of teams who finished above them who have made themselves worse this summer, and they could climb substantially up the table. I think a challenge is beyond them, but they should certainly be back in Europe next summer.
Off to Roma. Now, I'm excited at the transfers that they made this season, and I think definitely the gap is... I still think Juve are going to be the champions, but I don't think it's going to be a 17-point gap like it's been the last two seasons. I'm very excited about them. Are you excited about them making a title challenge?
Yeah, to an extent. I think 17 points and 18 goals worse off than Juve last season. You take out Tevez, you add in Dzeko. Okay, Juve have added Mandzukic and Dybala, but I think they've gone a long, long way to covering that gap. I think the league will be a little bit different this year because I think Juve will not concentrate so much on Europe because they don't think they're going to have as much success there. And you look at the amount of games Juve basically took off in the league last year, like the loss to Parma that was nailed in because they had a big Champions League game coming up. But Roma, It's hard because you want to say, yes, they've made all the right signings and a front three of Iturbe, Jovinho and Salah, who can split the wing position, and they've got Edin Dzeko, who seems the ideal centre-forward to play with those guys. But then they've got Francesco Totti, and I don't see how that fits when Garcia is so wedded to 4-3-3. I don't think tactics are the be-all and end-all of everything. I think he can find a way to play all those guys together. But until he does it, it's just a paper exercise. To me, they had Destro, who was a fine striker. They had Dubia, who was fantastic for CSKA Moscow in the Champions League, but never got a chance at Roma. So until Rudy Garcia shows on the pitch that he can play those guys and they can mount a sustained challenge, I'm yet to be convinced. I think they're better on paper than they were last year. I think they should mount a much more serious challenge. But we would have said the very same thing about them last summer, and it never came to fruition at all.
Adam Digby, our guest here on European Football Weekly. A quick note on Milan. I want to touch back there for a second because Sinisa Mihajlovic is going to be their coach this season, and he's a pretty interesting character and an interesting manager. How do you think he improves Milan, or does he improve Milan over Filippo Inzaghi, who was the coach last year?
I think that the advantage that he has over Inzaghi is, and no disrespect to Filippo Inzaghi, but which, you know, I'm going to disrespect him after that. he's a genuine coach. He's a genuine Serie A high-level coach. He understands the tactics of the game. He understands the flow of matches. He knows when to make the changes. I think Inzaghi proved at youth level with Milan that he's a fantastic motivator of young players. And he really should have stuck to that job. I think he was fantastic at that. And he was out of his depth in the first team. I think that makes a huge difference for them. And I think his relationship with some of the players from the past, the likes of Romagnoli, who we had at Sampdoria last season, will be essential to Milan. And I think he'll make them so much better just by his presence. I think there's going to be a question mark about his past with Inter, and I wonder if a couple of negative results, if that starts to rear its head. But so far, he's done all the right things, he's made all the right noises, and he looks to be the ideal person to take over that club.
Heading back to Rome, Lazio surprised everyone last year. I didn't expect them to finish third, 1 point behind Roma. You said that Roma, on paper, looks like they've gotten better. What about Lazio? Can they take over second, or are they falling down the pack?
I think with Lazio, I think they finished third almost by default last year. You look at the collapses of Fiorentina and Napoli, who I think, not so much Fiorentina now with the changes they've made, but Napoli certainly have a better depth of squad than Lazio and really should be finishing above them. And whichever way the Champions League qualifier against Leverkusen goes, Lazio are going to have Europe to consider. They've added some depth. They've not really gotten any better. They've added a few backup players, and I expect them to do a little bit better. I expect them to make a showing in Europe, but I really don't see them challenging those top three places again.
Top four predictions, Adam?
I would say Juve, Roma, Inter, and Napoli.
Ooh, Inter third.
Napoli. As long as Rafa Benitez is gone, Napoli should be better, right?
I think if those players who they've kept hold of, the likes of Callejon and Higuain, buy into what Maurizio Sarri does, I think they should have a really, really good season. Again, they've got Europe to contend with. I think they'll make a much stronger showing in the Europa League. Although they got to the semi-finals last year, but then they kind of just mailed it in after that. I just think that they should be fine because Maurizio Sarri is a smart coach, and if he can cut it at that level, they should do really, really well again. I don't expect the same from Fiorentina. Again, I've got to say, I think they're looking at a slip down the table from the other clubs.
All right, so last couple of questions, and we need them quick. A surprise team for the Serie A this year, and one player that we should be watching. Maybe a player not on any of the big sides, somebody out of the ordinary that you would pick out as a player to watch for fans watching the Serie A this year.
I think I'd be interested to see how Franco Vasquez gets on at Palermo now that Paulo Dybala is not there. Those two had fantastic chemistry last year. They got the newly promoted side up to 11th. I think they played really, really well, and it was largely because of that pairing in attack. But you're really interested to see how he gets on. He made his Italy debut last year. He led the league in assists. He should do quite well. A team I would say to keep an eye on is probably at the wrong end of the table, is Empoli. They did really, really well last year. They had Maurizio Sarri, and the likes of Daniele Rugani and Mirko Vladifiore, and they've lost all of those guys, and I think they could actually be in trouble after a good season. For a team going in the opposite direction, I think maybe Sassuolo. They held on to all their players. There's a few teams who finished above them who won't be as good as they were. And I think Domenico Berardi with them should have another fantastic season. He's maturing wonderfully well. He's got an amazing goal scoring and assist record in his first 2 years in Serie A. And I think he needs another big season to justify staying with them and then to kick on from there.
Hey, Adam, it's always a pleasure when you join the show. You're always so gracious with your time. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the season, and we'll talk again soon.
No problem. Talk to you soon, guys. Ciao, ciao.
And if you haven't yet, please get out there and find Adam's book. It is Juventus, A History in Black and White. It tells you all about the history of that great club that I don't love all that much.
It's definitely a lot better than Andre Pirlo's pamphlet that you read and that we keep smacking you in the head with.
I think, therefore, I play, Thomas.
Yeah.
That is Adam Digby. Always a pleasure to have him on the show. Do you have a quick prediction on both leagues? Because we got chirped last week for not giving our predictions on the Bundesliga.
Yep. You could read my predictions on my Bundesliga preview. It's Bayern Munich and the rest, so it doesn't matter there. But for Italy, I'm saying obviously Juventus definitely winning. And I want to say Atletico Madrid, but I don't see it happening, so I'm going to go with Barcelona. I know it's boring, but that's just the way these leagues are. The winner, they don't have to kick a ball yet. It's already over.
Screw that. I'm bucking the trend. I'm predicting Atletico Madrid to win La Liga this year.
Oh, I wish you're right, Dan.
I love their offseason. I love everything they did.
Me too.
They brought in a solid central defender. They brought in Felipe Luis, who they were missing sorely at left back last year. A couple of very good strikers, ones that will fit more than Mario Mandzukic did last year. This is going to be a very exciting season for Diego Simeone and Atletico Madrid. And because Barcelona and Real Madrid haven't beefed up too much, Atletico's going to catch them.
I agree. They've done everything that the other two haven't done, Atletico Madrid, and I hope you're right, but I don't see you bucking the trend and picking anyone else other than Juventus to win the Serie A.
Well, that's not going to
happen.
Well,
of course not. Of course.
But I will predict one of the Milan sides will finish in the top three this year.
Really?
I haven't decided if it's Inter or Milan yet, but...
Oh, how convenient, Dan. You haven't decided yet.
Yeah. I'm still...
I like what Inter has done more so than AC.
Yeah, I think they've both done pretty well this offseason. Over in the Bundesliga, this past weekend was the opening weekend. We previewed it for you last week on the show, European Football Weekly. But interesting start, Thomas. I mean, we all expected Bayern to thrash Hamburg the way they did, 5-0 in their opening game. But the other match, Saturday on Sportsnet 1, you saw Dortmund come back to life. 4-0, they beat Gladbach.
Whoa, we haven't seen that in a while from Dortmund. And
Gladbach was good last year. They finished top four.
And I think they're great this year, too. And I honestly thought that it would be a much closer game. But what?
4-0 doesn't even do Dortmund
justice. No, not at all. It was all action. Back and forth. Like I said, never saw Dortmund play like that. Last year, you know, there was little blips in the radar of the old Dortmund, but yeah, not like this under Thomas. Now I'm going to try it. Tuchel?
Yes.
Did I say it right?
I think so. I don't know. We'll have to get Stefan Buchko back on to tell us if we're saying it right.
Tuchel?
But yes, Dortmund under their new manager looking very, very good. Good early returns. It's going to be a fun Bundesliga on Sportsnet this year. I went first last week, so you go first this time around.
All right. It was a hard week. I'm going to go with Sergio Aguero. I had some time for Andre Ayew and Bafétimbi Gomez. He was my pick last week, but I can't pick him again this week. Sergio Aguero, he should have had four if it wasn't for Asmir Begovic.
That should make him not creme de la creme because he should have had so many more goals.
Yeah, but it was the goalkeeper.
Should have had a hat trick in the first half.
Begovic was brilliant. Come on.
But hey, the result was fake. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks, Jose. I'll go with Romelu Lukaku. I was stunned to see Everton thrash Southampton the way they did. I don't know what happened there, but unreal that they did it.
Do you know the story under this, the little story that happened with Lukaku in this game?
No.
In the warm-up.
Oh, yeah. The warm-up.
And he hit the lady, and he went up, and he apologized. And look at what karma does. You score two goals. And Roberto Martinez joked about it later, saying maybe he should hit women every warm-up. Probably not the best thing to say.
No, probably not the best thing.
He didn't mean it that way, but you know.
We'll have to see if Everton are able to keep John Stones after what happened with Chelsea this week. Not a guarantee.
£50 million.
We'll see what happens with that. But of course, for Thomas Michalakos, we'll have Bozy back next week. And not my terrible editing skills.
Get out of here. You've done a great job, Riccio.
Dan Riccio, European Football Weekly. Follow with the hashtag EFW590 on Twitter. We'll talk to you next week.